All right. And then the last action item we have on here is for the Minto and Foster truck ownership transfer. Greg, you probably haven't heard too much about this one, but so basically the state held the title for the fish transport trucks for the adults at Minto and Foster. And as part of the switch to a contract, the government wanted those trucks back in our name so that we could officially provide them as government furnished property. And so Chris Walker was actually successful in acquiring some GSA plates. They're sitting on his desk right now. And that was a big piece of it. So we submitted to contracting a modification to add those trucks to the government furnished property. And as soon as that modification goes to ODFW for you guys to sign, at that same day or week or whatever, we'll go down to Foster and Minto and swap the plates out.
Okay.
And complete that transfer. So hopefully there's no weird lapse where anyone's particularly liable for, you know, driving a vehicle they're not supposed to. So that's kind of where that sits. Any questions on those action items? Cool. All right, then we'll move on to updates. Greg Grimbimer, I'll turn it over to you for Marion Forks and Minto.
All right. Marion Forks is going well. They're transferring the last part of the Safe and Malala fish this week. Starting to pond our spring Chinook. Mortality looks really good there. Trying to decide whether to turn the snow equipment into lawnmower equipment or what we're doing yet. Seems like we might get some snow later this week. So kind of in flux there, but everything's going well. Minto's going well. 8 winter steelhead collected. I think the last I saw was 61 over Bennett. Still low clear flows. 4 of those 8 came in last week. We transferred in 121,000 smolts from Brett over at South, the summer steelhead smolts, and they're doing well. We'll go for a month acclimation there. Size and condition look great. Everything else is going well. We're trying to work out some issues with our TGG meter. For some reason, it doesn't want to work when we want it to work. So we're going to look at maybe buying one more, just a piece of a module to see if we can get it up and running again. But other than that, we're good.
Yeah.
We've also set up a crane training with ITI, who is the federal certified, I guess, agent that the Corps wants us to use, and we'll have that training in early April.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I saw a little bit of email traffic with that TDG meter with Chris Walker this morning. Those sound super expensive to replace.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we need to. I'm not sure if we need a specialist to look at it or if the Detroit crew can handle that. I'll circle back with Greg Eidman this afternoon or tomorrow and see if there's a way we can test it. But I'll work on that part. I think if we just buy the TGG component of that whole processing thing, I think it wouldn't be that much, maybe $400 or $500.
Okay. And is the current one broken? It's unusable right now?
Well, they're trying to, there's no display light, and I'm not sure how much they've gotten into it or understand the mechanics yet. So they were in looking at it yesterday and left before they talked to me. So I haven't heard back from what they troubleshot yesterday. So maybe they're going back and looking at the owner's manual. I'll follow up with that this afternoon.
Okay. And then the last thing, do you have a target week for release of those summer steelhead smolts?
Yeah, we're looking at about 4 more weeks, so that would be my calendar. I think we are shooting 4. The week of the 24th of April.
Cool. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, we did. They did have a little bit of a spike when they shut down the units up at Big Cliff. It got to about 116 at Niagara. It was still in the 104s down by us, so we didn't see much of an issue there.
Okay, good. Also, that reminds me, I talked to you and I talked to Tyler, I think, a couple weeks ago about the Detroit reservoir drawdown for the temperature control tower construction. And I finished the draft that I was working on, so I might run that by you guys and probably loop you in on that too, Ryan, just okay. So you can take a look at it and kind of the potential impacts that I would anticipate. A lot of those alternatives for different construction scenarios are still a little bit up in the air, so it's hard to know exactly what the impacts are going to be, but yeah. Made a best guess.
They're going to be good.
No, yeah, not ideal.
And I think the panic mode up here is I haven't had any questions in the last couple of weeks, so either they're doing a great job with information or they're just waiting for more. I don't know.
Cool. All right, thanks, Greg. All right, South Sandyam and Foster. Brett, how are things going for you?
Things are going well. We just released the last group of Chinook that we were acclimating from Willamette. There's 200,000, and those are going out okay. And then we transferred the 121,000 summer steelhead to Minto. We still have not seen a winter steelhead adult yet at Foster. We're checking it visually daily and sweeping it twice a week. And they're just not getting here yet, but it looks like there's 900 plus over the Willamette Falls, so I'm expecting we'll see some soon. And then the juveniles that we have left on site are doing well. The fish pathology was just out, and everything looked good. No disease signs present yet in our fry, so that's good. And then we have our 160,000 summer steelhead smolts that we're going to release here, start the volitional release April 1st, and then on April 9th. And I guess I didn't see that date, Greg. Just so you know, we won't be able to make that training on the 9th, so we'll just have to cancel that. We have to haul those fish over to McKenzie. We have 30,000 over to McKenzie for the McKenzie River that we have to load up. So anyhow, that's about all I have. Other than that, we're just kind of, you know, now that we got rid of some fish, kind of doing the cleanup, seasonal cleanup, you know, that you have to do once you get rid of all that stuff. So that's about what we're doing.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right, moving on to the McKenzie. Kurt.
Well, we've released 400,000 of our smolts over the last couple months, last day of January, I think near the last day of February, also trying to take advantage of any flow out here that looks a little bit more than what has been going on. Everybody's got low water, obviously. Our last group, 200,000, will be released possibly tomorrow. EWEB's supposed to draw down the lake behind Leeburg Dam, and they're doing a collaborative effort with some other folks. I'm not sure if you guys are involved or not at the Corps, but looking at the lamprey population in the mud flats there right behind the dam. So they're doing that starting tomorrow. So they're going to add 1,000 CFS into the flow of the river below the dam. So we're going to take advantage of that and release our fish and the last group of smolts here. It's been good fish health. We've had real good luck this year with fish health. And smolts have done well with that. The fry that are out there are, we have no problems with the fry. They're eating well. Growth is real good. Spent a lot of time the last few weeks just maintenance projects around the hatchery here. Totally revamped our incubation area and with new paint on the walls. We painted the old pipeline, the 40-some-odd-year pipeline in those strainers from the avocado green that it was to a smoke gray. So looks really different. but it looks nice and cleaned up. So that's looking good. We've been doing other things. Some of the lighting projects that went on last summer, we've been catching up on the ceiling where they, you know, took down the old lighting and the new lighting. So there was various holes and stuff like that. So we're just taking care of that kind of stuff. We've had Homeland Security in here a couple weeks ago, checking our chemical storage area to see if it passes their requirements, and it does. So we'll have an area for chemical storage that mostly it's hydrogen peroxide that we're thinking about. And we alarmed the doors for the building it's going to be in, and everything's hooked up to our main alarm system, so it will prompt anybody in the middle of the night that there could be a problem if something is happening, which I doubt will ever happen, but who knows. But anyway, so we can do that, and that's about it. Just a lot of maintenance stuff going on.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks, Kurt. All right. Moving on to Cougar. Chad, what's going on?
Hopefully we'll have a facility operating tomorrow afternoon. That's the latest I heard this morning.
Nice.
There's a couple issues with two of the pumps. One of the pumps having some thermal problems and keeps tripping out. And then the third pump, they're waiting for some cables or something that got lost during the rebuild of it last year. So. As of now, hopefully operational tomorrow afternoon. That rock slide has still not been cleared. I think the latest I heard on that is hopefully by Memorial Day. So quite a big spill up there, a big landslide up there. I mean, Doug was talking about, I guess there's some drone footage. If you Google it.
Yeah.
There's some YouTube footage of somebody who flew a drone up there. And I guess it's some of the size of these rocks that are pretty impressive, so check it out. But that's all I have for the facility up there.
And does that block you guys from getting to the rock climbing sites you need to be at?
Man, we can't even get around the reservoir. I think there is a back road, but it's in pretty bad shape, so kind of stuck at this point.
Okay.
And then for bull trout releases, I think we'll just have to release them right there at the dam, that road that accesses the tower and the PFFC.
Oh, yeah, right there at the face.
Temporarily release them there,
All right.
So that's all I have for Cougar.
You doing Fall Creek too?
I am.
All right.
Spoke with the folks over there this morning. April 27th is when the commissioning is scheduled to take place. The problem valve that is kind of holding things up, evidently shipped out yesterday, so everything is rolling along. And I guess Jeff Hicks has got a tour scheduled for Jeff Brown on the 26th to see the facility. So
Jeff Brown from NIMS?
NIMS, yeah.
Yeah,
so okay. That is all I have for Fall Creek, but yeah, moving along.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, Willamette and Dexter. Dan Peck, are you on the line? Doesn't sound like it.
No, I really don't have anything. One issue for Dexter, but I think we'll talk about it in that deferred maintenance section. Otherwise, things at Willamette are going well. Fish health is good.
Okay.
No other issues to report.
Cool. Yeah, I just wanted to check in about that valve replacement.
Yeah.
Not Dexter. Okay, perfect.
I don't know if that's specifically on the list, but we can chat about it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
Lieberg?
I don't have any update other than what we talked about in the above section.
Okay.
We got the funding, kind of waiting on the lease and everything else to play out. We did, after some of the issues there, we just with no fine staff, I had a good phone call I was able to make a couple weeks ago letting them know that the layoff process had been terminated.
Cool.
That was nice to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Jennifer's back to work, so she broke her hip.
Oh, nice.
Over the summer. She returned to work last week, so that's awesome.
Cool.
So how many folks you have on site there?
Three. Three full-time employees. We had a seasonal position that was funded with a co-production team from the gorge. So that'll wrap up. I think there's a laborer just helping out with a few odd things. Basically,
so Jennifer back up there now?
Yep, as of last week, yeah.
Okay, good.
And those coho are set to stay there until April? Is
that right? The last group just went out last week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they're gone now. All right. And then we still have on here fish counts at Bennett Dam and Lieberg Dam. And Cam used to kind of fill us in back in the good old days. I don't suppose you have anything for that, Ryan?
I don't know.
Okay.
I know there's probably, it might be some information on the DPW website.
Yeah, I get the weekly or the, is it weekly? Updates weekly. From Bart?
Yeah.
Yeah, the spreadsheet. Cool. All right. That's it for the updates, the hatcheries, and just kind of an update on the Lamphelly contracts. The main hatchery contract, as you guys all know, has been awarded, and that's current. We've got a couple of modifications pending. Ryan, thanks for the info on taking genetic clips.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, no problems there. I think maybe next week at Willamette FPOM, I might just let folks know that that's the case, and it probably won't happen this year.
Okay.
Unless there's, I guess unless ODFW and NIMS feel like it's mandatory that we do that. And obviously we've already missed some for winter steelhead. But
what are we not?
Not taking genetic clips for unmarked fish returning to Minto Foster. So would preclude doing any genetic work those years. We'd have
so
gaps.
What's driving that? Us or?
Well, kind of both. It didn't make it into the contract. It probably should have. But it was one of those weird things that was maybe going to be handled by Armony, maybe is more of an operational thing.
Yeah.
So we looked at adding it into the operational contract, and Ryan was saying it really doesn't cost a whole lot of money to actually take those SNPs,
right. But
to store and preserve and mark and kind of catalog them.
I don't think people have a huge price tag.
Yeah.
That is basically what you guys were paying Cam to do through that M&E program.
Right.
That was not a lot of what he did, but that's what his group did. So it's not.
Yeah.
It's not something that doesn't have a cost. It has a cost of time.
For sure.
So is that a done deal?
I don't think it has to be a done deal. I think what it would take is
when I start thinking about foster weir evaluation. Downstream passage at Detroit potentially, and all these things. Every time we break that time series, it's going to be, at least in terms of taking the actual.
Yeah. In my opinion, it's always a good idea to take. Maybe you don't analyze until there's a good question to answer, but
always
take them so you have them. So really what it would be then is getting a cost estimate. So how much does it cost to appropriately take these and store them and catalog them in a way that they're useful later on? And at this point, it would be a modification to the Willamette Valley contracts.
Okay.
I've met a lot of hesitancy due to our budget shortfalls this year for any cost increases associated with that contract.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think Willamette FPOM is probably a good venue to bring it up in, because if everyone feels like the region as a whole feels like this is of vast importance, and I think it is, then that might create enough motivation to move it forward on our end. But that money has to come from somewhere, and it means that something else is probably taking a hit.
So, we sort of see the value in it. Kind of a tough situation too, where it's important, and like all the other tasks that we perform. And the contract spells those out. These are the tasks.
Totally.
No, it's not in there. It's not in there.
And I don't expect Greg or Brett to all of a sudden take on a role that someone else has been performing for the last 10 years. So
and maybe you're gonna come out and do it on decks, but you do have the M&E. Is there any potential connectivity between that work and what might be awarded in an M&E contract? Or is that unclear still?
Maybe. So the way that that contract or that scope of work is currently structured is just field work. So it's missing the entire chunk of work that occurs at the hatchery. So the way the scope is currently worded, no, I don't think there would be overlap in an M&E contractor coming in and taking genetic clips. Right now, it is just basically spawning surveys. And this came up at the last Willamette FPOM.
Yeah.
And I think that was a little bit of a surprise to folks. And Mullen at NIMS, I know, spoke up about it. In future years, I would hope that that M&E contract would include everything that's been done in the past. So doing the field work and the spawning surveys, but you need to compare that to something, right? I mean, a lot of what we're looking at is what is the wild or natural origin population doing compared to the hatchery population, and you need some comparison between those things. Are we seeing a difference in genetics? Are we seeing a difference in age structure, size class, and stuff like that? So without the comparison, it's not as valuable as I think it could be. So.
Just from like the hatchery perspective, at least from what I've seen at Foster, the actual taking of the clips, as long as we're provided like the containers, and especially if we can do like a batch sample, that's not a lot of additional work. It was everything else that was really tough. If you're pit tagging, measuring, taking scale samples, and you know, like for the winters, it's super easy because usually most of the time that's all we have. But when we start getting into spring Chinook, that's when it got difficult. If we had a lot of, you know, hatchery fish we had to process, and then we had to do all that other data work, it was pretty much impossible. That's, you know, where Cam's crew came in handy. But the problem I saw with having somebody else coming in and do samples is it really kind of handicaps us as far as when we can and cannot work the trap, because every time we want to work the trap, those people have to be present to take samples. And especially with the new contract requirements of having to do it 3 times a week, something to consider would be the level of sampling that you guys want to include. If it's just putting a clip, if it's just a batch sample, putting a clip in a vial, you know, that's or in a container of alcohol, that doesn't take any time at all. I mean, that's super easy.
Yeah. Thanks, Brett. That's good to know. Yeah, I remember being out there when you guys run the trap, and there were usually, Cam had like a crew of 2 people out there to do all the other morphometric collection. Whenever you got a natural origin fish.
Right, yeah, but like I said, if it's, we're having to load those fish anyway, or if we're, you know, whether they go into a post-sort pool or onto the truck, to take a pair of scissors and take a small piece of caudal fin, and that's a second or two, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, we've already got the fish in hand.
Right.
You know, if that's all we have to do. But like I said, it's all that other work that really slows things down. So like I said, just a matter of what you want done.
For sure. So Ryan, do you think you could put together an estimate of what that would cost if it was just taking fin clips?
Yep, and I think even from a cost and a time perspective, handling the fish is probably less work than somebody. Unless you want at the end of the season vials of ethanol with fin tissue in them and just hand it to you. But if the assumption is that OVFW would then sort of catalog that, Well, you got complicated, but that adds a layer of complexity to it.
Yeah.
I guess we don't want to just sit in that Foster or Minto or in my office and that.
Right.
Again, it's not a lot of work or a lot of money either way, but it is part of what.
Yeah.
Limiting contract.
For sure. Where are all the other samples housed right now? Are those
That's
in
a great question.
Corvallis?
I suspect those are in the. In the library of the. Well, to be honest, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I know our Corvallis CRL folks do categorize and store
right.
all of that stuff.
It would make sense to me to store them all in the same place.
Yeah.
So
find out the space we can and find out like what that system is, how that might work, who would be the point on receiving and
right.
cataloging that stuff.
And so probably the larger cost would be more of a covering some portion of that person's time, whoever that happens to be, that's actually taking and cataloging and doing that.
I'll touch base with Cam and
okay.
see how that would work.
Cool.
Are you thinking single files for each clip or just a bulk male, female with, I've seen it kind of done differently.
I don't know. obviously,
like the hatchery is a lot. It's just males, a big jar for males, a big jar for females. But if you're looking
right.
at length data and all that stuff, then I don't
know what that is. So I think what Brett mentioned is the easy thing would be to put all to batch all of your samples. And then for Chinook, they might have broken down by month or something like that. And Greg and Brett, feel free to jump in. But
yeah, we did weekly batch samples.
That's easy.
Everything went, for 1 week, everything went into one jar.
Okay. That's easy, but doing the
length. And we separated hatchery versus wild were two separate, but.
Doing lengths and other stuff like that and associated length to a specific sample.
Right.
It's complicated
yeah.
and that's a huge impact on man hours.
For sure. So Greg Taylor, looking at what we may want to use these for in the future.
Yeah.
What would be the most useful way to collect
right.
and store them?
It'd be nice to get the estimate for the full meal deal and then decide whether that's worth it or we can.
The estimate for like all the other, like length,
yeah,
sex.
I mean, for clipping, yeah, for getting the individual clips with the, the length and the
yeah.
sex and data return.
That's going to take me, I can put that together, it's going to take, hopefully by next week, but that's not
yeah.
a small number.
Yeah.
That's a
good
chunk of Cam's entire crew was doing that hatchery sampling, so
yeah.
What was that?
That was 705, yeah. So
maybe a third of that?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hatchery sampling to cover the facilities?
I mean,
again, that's just shooting from the hip, but that,
yeah.
that's bodies and
hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's to cover Foster and Minto?
Yeah.
Steelhead and Chinook?
I mean, that's kind of what we were doing in
I
the past.
We've been doing that for Steelhead, the individual sampling at any point. I don't believe you. And again, Greg and Brett, correct me if I'm wrong. Because I don't think the
we've been doing individual sampling for winners throughout for several years now.
Because the numbers, dozens, not
right.
hundreds or thousands, yeah.
Yeah.
And we would, the hatchery crew, we would normally just do the sampling until Chinook started, until the, the hatchery, numbers of hatchery fish started increasing. Because, unfortunately, the way the winters have been returning, it's just one here, two there, three there, it's something we could handle unless they wanted to come out for whatever reason. But it's like I said, with all the other samples, it's when you start, if you got 300-400 fish in the trap and we're having to process all those hatchery adults, then you have to stop and, take all those other samples. That's when it gets hard.
Here's the problem. you know, you're going to build a $150 million structure in Detroit that you want to evaluate, I'd hate to have some holes in the data set down the road because we didn't want to spend, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 here. And I'm not saying that would make or break that analysis, but it's going to be a big part of the analysis. I mean, the genetic pedigree work has been, I think, the most reliable tool for evaluating performance. And there's going to be a lot of questions about performance related to that structure, a lot.
Yep.
We got a lot riding on the performance of that structure. So I guess I'm at least advocating that we explore this a little bit. And then, you know, if it's can't do it, we can't do it. But
I guess if I knew exactly what we needed or wanted and knew that I had the materials to do it, and I guess maybe Brett and I could each evaluate our facilities to see what help we would need to gain the data that you really want.
Do we need the scale? That's right.
I mean, because I guess currently at Minto, we batch sample every week, and we take, you know, the length on coated wire tag fish, that kind of stuff. But if there was, you know, extra special stuff that you wanted from each basin and would let us know, then I think we could evaluate what we needed.
Well, I think at the very least, it'd be nice to know what the cost would be for just weekly batch samples. I have a feeling that one is fairly possible to accomplish and put into place. That whole, like, basically half of what Cam's group used to do, that's going to be so much cost. I don't think that would be possible to work in this year. Maybe in future years, but.
Yeah. Well, I know at Minto, we do all the genetic sampling, batch sampling. We never had Cam's crew do that for us.
For Chinook too?
Yes.
Okay. Did Cam's crew provide you guys with vials and storage bins and stuff like that?
Yeah, we got the storage containers and then the alcohol from him. I mean, as status quo, we really didn't have a lot of studies on the north last year. Basically, we didn't bring Cam's crew in until late August and September when we were getting ready to do all the coated wire tag sampling and sampling after spawning.
Right. So Ryan, you think next week's maybe pushing it? I know that larger estimate is fairly time consuming.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think thing. That would be. Yeah, let me touch base with Cam and try to see what his thoughts are.
Okay.
And for the bigger estimate, I think it'd be very crude to say it was $700,000 a year and up X percent of that effort went towards collecting that information.
Yeah.
That's probably how I would look at that. But then for the batch sampling, I think we can get a real basis of what it would actually take and what it would actually cost.
Cool.
A much smaller number and should be more. Should be able to get a closer shot at that.
Cool. All right. Sounds good. So let's see, where were we? Oh, Willamette Hatchery kind of contract status update. So there's a couple mods coming through. The option year for that one has to be awarded by the 1st of September. So Chris and I are working on entering that request for a modification. I guess it's an award in this case. Into the contract software, so we'll start working on that. And then we've also heard from our contracting folks that we should start working on the new contract that'll be awarded after this option year expires, and get that in place. And they wanted to start it this early so that they finally realized that, oh yeah, it would be a good idea if these could run for longer. And so they're gonna, with the longer lead time, we're able to get these higher level approvals. And so the idea would be a base plus four option years. So it runs for 5 years total, which would be way easier on us. Probably doesn't make a ton of difference to you guys, but
yeah. Okay.
A little more security. The Trout contract in the Willamette was awarded to Desert Springs. Like I mentioned earlier, we have had a shortfall in funding for this next year. And so right now, deliveries that would occur in 2019, only the amount of 100,000 trout, or 100,000 pounds, sorry, has been awarded for delivery in 2019. We're hoping to award the remaining options that would allow us to get back up to 277,000, but right now the money's not available. It's out there in an unfunded request to see if that'll get funded, but just want to keep folks aware of that situation. And then the last one is the monitoring and evaluation contract. Chris Walker's been working on that. He finished the scope of work on that. He's also just completed the independent government estimate, which is kind of just our estimate of what it would cost, and that's going through review. And that's kind of the one of the last pieces that we need before we can actually put this out and get folks bidding on it.
So will that be? Is that an open competitive or what style?
So it seems like this weird hybrid style. It's something called a MATOC, and I couldn't tell you what that stands for. Maybe you guys are more familiar with it, but it's a pre-selected group of people, and they've all been approved to do a certain type of work. And if your work fits within that, the scope that already is out there, you can go to these pre-selected groups and put it out to bid between them. So this is a MATOC that Walla Walla District currently has. So we're going to kind of borrow it from them. And it includes a number of different private firms. I'm not totally sure off the top of my head which ones they are. But I'm pretty sure that ODFW is not one of them. I think Oregon State might be. So it's competitive in a way, but it's among kind of a pre-selected group. So it won't go out to the public necessarily. So that's where that one sits. All right, so moving along, the next thing on the list is the hatchery deferred maintenance.
I just sent that email to everybody on your distribution log.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, Andy, I had a quick question about the trout.
Sure. Yeah.
I just was wondering, does that affect, I guess, the stocking for the summer? There'll be reduced stockings this summer?
Not this summer. It would be summer of 2019.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure, because I know we get a lot of questions and about stocking schedules. And so sounds like you guys have a website available for the stocking in case we get people, anglers asking.
We do.
Give the stocking date, the stocking numbers and estimated times and stuff.
We do. I will email you that website.
Okay, cool. That'd be nice to have, just to pass along. Like I said, we do get a lot of questions, so appreciate it.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of questions myself.
I bet. Everybody wants their fish.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but the stocking for this summer is the full 277,000 pounds. So
okay.
It should look pretty similar to what's been done in the past.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so Ryan just printed out the deferred maintenance list for folks here in the room.
So there's two pages, one's front and back, one pager. So that's the deferred maintenance list items from all of the Willamette Valley hatcheries.
Okay.
Plus Dexter. And then the other one, just for, I guess, more for information. So these are the things that... that I talked about with the hatchery managers, and either put on a list or had been on a list for a standing list of issues.
Yeah.
The other one, the three-page staple handout, is something that the State of Oregon DAS Department of Administrative Services did as part of a survey. I don't know all the background. They were kind of selective on the building, individual buildings had to be this large. I think it was 100,000 square feet and had a certain value. And then they went through all of the buildings on a structure and did this assessment with a caveat that they didn't look at any structures, only building, but it was non-structural or no structure. No, you know, if you had a rotting 2x4, unless it was exposed on a wall, they wouldn't look at that kind of stuff. So no sort of geotechnical, none of the concrete ponds. So a lot of it's, well, I guess, generally what we would consider cosmetic paint and replacing doors, replacing siding. And I only included Marion Forks. I also have McKinsey. The other facilities weren't complete. But you can see Marion Forks, you go through the facility, and it's, you know, $1.6 million. And that doesn't touch really any of the issues that are on the other deferred maintenance list. So a different way to look at deferred maintenance, I guess. Some of the things are interesting. They have electrical panels to meet current code. So that's the difference between the two lists, one that we generated and the other one that came from a DAS survey. I can't think of the name of the contractor, the engineering firm that put that together. But.
Okay.
For a working list, I would think the Willamette Valley Hatchery Deferred Maintenance List is probably, in my mind, a better list to work from.
Yeah, for sure. And these seem like a little bigger ticket items on the deferred maintenance list. It's like more entire projects.
Right.
More than kind of, like this breaks it down to replacing certain doors or a panel board or something.
Dexter's the first one. The pipeline is that first line, Andy, and that...
Yeah.
Well, I guess that one kind of addresses, but not really, the issue with the valve that Doug and Dan brought up recently.
Right.
So I was down there a couple weeks ago, met with Dan and Doug, and then Perry Baker, our engineer, showed up. And Perry was going to work on this a little bit to try to give us some estimates of what it would cost. But rather than, you know, just addressing that one valve that won't shut off, there really are some other issues. There's the main pipeline. And then there's the header pipe, and then there's the vein valves. There's kind of a series of pipe-related issues. So our approach was going to be to present to you kind of a suite of projects related to Dexter piping issue, piping and valving issues.
Right.
I'm guessing it's going to be a chunk of money, probably, you know, a couple $100,000.
Yeah.
But then we could look at it and say, okay, maybe we don't do the main pipe. Maybe we just address this valve to the adult working. So, yeah, currently, I think the issue that came up was there's no way to shut off the water that goes to that, to the actual adult working area, the tower.
Okay.
It's a feed off of the 40-inch or 48-inch main line with no, the shutoff is frozen, open. I guess luckily it's in the open position.
Yeah.
But if anything happens downstream of that pipe, you have no way to shut off any of the water to that sorting facility, potentially put it out of commission if something were to go haywire.
Right.
So that, I'm hoping to get something to you here in a couple of weeks, but our guys are pretty busy, our engineers are busy.
Sure. I know we've also looked at what it would cost to just replace the supply pipe.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they did some initial designs and everything for Dexter and had costs put to those. So I think we've tried to break it out before, but it's still been millions.
Yeah.
So we can maybe help with some of that estimated cost, at least on our end. And it's been brought up as well as like a dam safety issue. You know, if that thing fails, it's basically a hole in your dam.
Right.
So our guys have been pretty concerned about that in the past.
It stopped once Jack drained.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to go through each line. You know, the ones for the hatcheries, Greg, Brett, Kurt, you know, feel free to chime in on those hatchery-specific projects. Then for Marion Forks, the shutoff valves, I think that and the pond valves, I think you went out and saw that issue with Chris.
Yeah, I looked at a number of those.
So hopefully none of these are surprising. I think we're just looking at buildings and facilities that are reaching, a lot of them reaching 70 years old, and quite frankly, some of them have been, I hate to use the word neglected, but in some cases we haven't addressed some of these issues. They've added up, so.
Yeah, for sure.
I know with the upcoming environmental inspections, that may or may not raise more deferred maintenance issues. I know the covering on those, you know, piping of the intake lines or water have asbestos, so.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, Greg. I'm sure they will uncover some things that
yes.
need to be addressed.
And for the McKenzie, looking at some of these dollar figures, you know, they're pretty crude estimates, I think, some of them. But I did check with our local McKenzie Valley Pump, which do a lot of domestic water wells and systems. And they came in here and they're looking at what we got, and they said it would probably be more like $80,000 to $100,000 to replace the tank and all the infrastructure that goes along with it. And on this, it says $40,000. So, anyway, that doesn't surprise me actually.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know, Kurt. And I think when we go ahead and put these into budgets, we'll maybe try to be conservative and buffer them on the high side of the estimates, and obviously check back with you guys when the dollar figure actually gets punched into a spreadsheet. Make sure we've got the most recent estimate.
Okay.
So Andy, what's your best guess at how we would how would we get this done from a budget and funding standpoint for the bigger ticket items? You mentioned the money for Willamette. You see that being incorporated into the O&M contract for that 2020 budget year, or as a standalone contract?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. With the contract now, it's definitely less flexibility than we had with the cooperative agreement.
Right, to assign additional task orders or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. What I've seen with the Corps is if we do our own separate contract and it requires some amount of engineering or plans, then the cost usually goes to the roof because our engineering section gets involved and prolongs the time frame, but also jacks up the amount of money it costs. So for things that aren't like critical or maybe attached to our structures, like the water supply pipe texture, obviously we want our guys looking at that, but
right.
if it's something less intensive and it's just at the hatchery, I guess my preference would be to go through ODFW. You guys have some more leniency in the contract rules than we do.
Right.
But also, just as far as like coordination goes, it's probably easier for you guys to try to coordinate with the contractor. We're almost like, a third party that's kind of just another piece of information gets passed through us and stuff. So I'd almost rather just have ODFW take care of it. But that would be a substantial modification to the contract, and it would definitely be, like that kind of stuff isn't included in the current scope.
Right, intentionally, right.
Right. So I'll have to talk to Kim, our contracting officer, and see how we handle that stuff. I know, so I asked her about the valve replacement at Dexter, that smaller one. And she was saying like, okay, well, that makes sense for ODFW to take care of that. It's not a routine maintenance item. So she was saying, get a list of contractors, and those contractors that would take care of replacing that valve would essentially be subcontractors to ODFW. And there's rules that we have, and since we're working kind of through the contract vehicle that already exists, the Corps has to see those subcontractors and make sure they fit within the regulations that are currently in place through that vehicle. So there's some amount of like oversight, I guess, or like approval that it would take for the Corps to use the current contractor and have you guys use subcontractors.
And I think initially that was the route that Dan had called a few contractors, had at least one look, and Dan didn't have what he needed there was questions on the depth of the pipe and the size of the vault that would be installed, because those are unbolted right now. So that was why, you know, we had tied our engineering folks in and just said, okay, if you're going to replace this valve and put a bolt in, this is what we would need to do. So just to be able to get a list of contractors and potentially an estimate. So
gotcha.
slow the process down.
Yeah. Sure. So anyways, I guess to try to answer your question, I think with some of these smaller type of things, working through you guys and having you having ODFW find contractors and complete the work seems like a reasonable way to go. And in my previous conversations with Kim, seems like it's possible. For some of these larger things, like once we are getting past 100,000, looking at all those valves for the ponds and Marion Forks, and you know, all those are kind of tied into the shutoff valves as well. You kind of want to do that at the same time. Yeah. And I mean, that could add up to a substantial cost. And I don't know if that'd be like a big enough differential between, a big enough delta, I guess, between like what the contract value is and the additional work we're kind of asking to have done. I'll have to check with Kim on that one. That's where I kind of hesitate to say if that's the appropriate sure. path to use or not. That's where the Corps may want to have a separate contract. And it may still be possible to go through the state,
mm-hmm.
especially given the circumstances with the state operating it, and in some cases the state owning some of the equipment.
Yeah, maybe
having like the mixed ownership,
standalone, you know, so related tied to this contract, but a standalone maintenance and repair,
right?
Large maintenance item and repair contract.
Yeah, okay. I've never done it with state agencies. I have done this type of thing with other federal agencies. So with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we've done, it's called an assisted acquisition, where we've moved money to a federal agency, and then that federal agency takes on contracting with an outside maintenance contractor to come in and do repairs.
Sure.
And it's kind of weird because I think the preference is always for like removing those middlemen, so to speak, and like the Corps to just go directly to the contractor doing the work. So it takes some extra approvals, but I have done it before.
Okay.
And had another agency assist us in that acquisition. I would assume something similar exists
yeah.
for the
and
the state
depending
side.
On how the scope and the, you know, the scale and the type of work, in many cases, if we then award a subcontract to, let's say, a contractor to do the pond valves at Marion Forks, most of the time we can do that indirect free.
Okay.
Without passing on indirect rate or fee.
Yeah.
That could help justify it.
Cool. That's good to know, because that's obviously going to be the question is like, all right, well, passing the money through the state,
yeah.
are we going to get that indirect hit?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good to know. That's an option.
Okay.
So we'll take a look at these. Are these organized by priority at all, Brian?
No, no, just by facility. So the list is organized by facility alphabetical.
Right, yeah, I see
but
that.
Then within the facility, no, there's no priority.
Okay. I would assume there is some amount of priority at each facility.
Yeah.
A lot of these things are kind of linked, and some of them are maybe equivalent, but...
Right, so there's value, whether, you know, either...
Yeah.
We could do it outside of HMT, or HMT is a group we could go through and prioritize within the facility and then prioritize among the facilities. And obviously, you know, I think as we talked, and Lance obviously weighed in a number of months ago that, you know, the Lion Building Pond has
right.
some pressing priority.
For sure. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll take a look at these over the course of the next month and talk with some folks back at the Corps, maybe talk with you guys a little bit on what priorities might be and start working these into future budgets.
Okay.
And if things work out the way they're supposed to, then I think having all these items scheduled to be in budgets for future years is a little bit more of a guarantee than hoping to find money at the end of the year or all these unfunded requests. My hope would be that in the next decade or two, I mean, this is probably for the people that would come after me in this position, but all these things would be in the pipeline and we're able to take care of them as they come up and we get new fiscal year budgets.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, cool. All right, well, that's all I've got on that one, unless you have anything else.
Good.
Okay, cool. Last thing we had on the agenda for today was a brief from Lance on the draft EIS and the next steps for consultation. Lance, did you join us on the phone? Sent him an email previously, and he said he'd try to call in, but he said it might be kind of tough. So, if Lance is not on the phone, I also mentioned that Willamette FPOM might be a good place to do it, so maybe next week he can call in and give us a little update. He just mentioned that might be beneficial when he sent out the draft EIS to folks in the region, kind of just give his thoughts on how they're going to move forward. Sounds like kind of an aggressive schedule, trying to get everything in place with the public comment period and all the certain timelines that they're required to stick to. But it sounds like pushing for completion late summer and fall so that potentially take natural origin broodstock. That's what I've heard him talk about. So, all right. Well, that brings us to the end of our agenda. Unless anybody has anything else.
I do have one question, I guess, for Andy.
Sure.
For clarification on 3.1 of the contract stuff. So you were talking about modifying the contract and then awarding the option year, and are those two separate? Two separate events?
Yeah.
Okay.
So before we had talked about waiting on some of these minor mods and just including them in the option year modification. And it looks like what we're going to do is there's a small batch of relatively minor modifications we're going to do now.
Okay.
It's been submitted to contracting. So that now they're kind of two separate things.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So they're all, I think, just more like wordsmith kind of different corrections, no cost modifications. So you guys should probably see that in the next couple weeks.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah. That's all I got.
All right. Anything else from folks on the phone?
Hey, Andy, you mentioned that we may be able to start taking natural origin fish possibly this spawning season. I just want to throw this out there that There's other things that go along with that, taking otolith samples and scale samples and some other things. So I don't know if any of that's funded either.
That's a good point.
And that's kind of important because here at McKenzie, we found when we were doing this for many years, we'd vary from 5% actual natural origin to 50% or 55%. So to get a real handle on what we are doing, I think that's pretty important to monitor that.
Right, for sure. Well, hopefully with the advent of clipping trailers, there's not quite as many miss marks, but...
Yeah, it's much better. It is, but things aren't foolproof either. But
A good point, though, because that's not been contemplated in the current contract.
If that process is just starting to play out now, it's hard to imagine. It's a little hard to imagine that you're going to get the result and implement by this fall. But it's a good point for thinking about next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Some year down the road when that does happen.
Yeah. And Kurt, I mean, I don't know if that's going to be the case. That's just what I've heard Lance. And actually, I think I heard maybe Bruce McIntosh mentioned when discussing these kind of things. That's the goal.
Sure. I mean, this season here would be our fifth season without incorporating any unmarked fish. So, you know, we're starting to, get quite a few years put in there without doing it. So.
Right. I mean, Ryan, do you have any inclination as to whether or not that's a possibility for you guys this fall?
To incorporate wild origin brood?
Yeah.
I think it would be our intent to incorporate wild origin brood, assuming that the HCMP is signed and finalized prior to, the end of at least brood collection this spawning. I think Greg's right. It's a lofty goal, but at this point, that's kind of what we're looking at.
Okay.
I hadn't thought about, as Kurt mentioned, that little stuff, and that wasn't on my radar. So.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither.
And that was all, and that was kind of tied up in Cam's crew and the stuff.
Right.
All of that with sampling, because they also were over the sampling the fish on the spawning grounds. So that was all of that kind of tied together.
Yet another reason for the sole source to the state.
Yeah.
One of many. Okay. Yeah, we'll have to think about that.
Well, I guess on that issue, and Kurt brought the McKenzie, and I know there's budget issues, but I guess, and tell me if you can't talk about it, but related to the HGMP passage and the McKenzie in particular, is it the Corps' expectation to fund the full release of Spring Chinook, the $605,000?
From what I've heard, yes.
Okay.
The court order we have says once you have an approved, signed HGMP, you can do that.
Okay.
You're no longer held to the 360.
Okay.
So, everything that I've heard from my end, and everything that's kind of like built into the budgets of what comes through to fund McKenzie Hatchery, still is on track to do.
Okay. So, it won't be a surprise to folks when nobody says that. But right. I mean, so, and I guess that hope, my hope is that we would incorporate that into the 9-1, option year one contract.
Yeah. So that's a good point too. But that's already been bid on, and a price has been decided. But that price is
right.
Well, so that price is for the scope that was discussed, and the scope is just for the $360,000 at McKenzie. So if we change the scope to go up to $605,000 at McKenzie, then that would trigger the price difference. It's going to cost more, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yes, it's going to cost more. I guess the way the bid is structured, and I don't know if this helps or not, the way the bid is structured, it's, we built the bid package with 100%, with the 605, and then applied that reduction to cover the portion that the Corps is not paying for.
Okay.
So if you took out the reductions, that's what's in the bid, is the full production.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So, I mean, that's not, I hear what you're saying, that the bottom line dollar has the cost for the 360, but the way we got to that price was building the budget for 605 and then applying a reduction based on the 240.
Okay. And that information's in the bid.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to go back and dig that up.
So I highlight them in green, the cells that we applied the reduction to.
Cool.
So if you pulled out all those reductions, you'd know what the difference was.
Nice. Okay, that's perfect, because that's what I'll need if we do have to do a cost increase for the option here. Of course, all of this hinges on whether or not we get HGMPs in time. But yeah, that's a good point. So this, when and where these things do get approved, that's going to have implications elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And second, third order effects.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not... there would be some, there'd be some internal discussion if that isn't funded for the next brood year,
I can't guarantee that we'd actually produce and release those fish. And we've been kind of carrying that for, what, now 4 years.
Right.
At a huge price tag. So I don't know. There's some internal heartburn on that.
Understandably. Okay. Chad, you had something?
I just had a quick question for ODFW in general. What's the latest on the Willamette Falls sea lion relocation or removal?
That's a good question. I don't... It's active. It's ongoing. I saw an update from Friday that the ODFW Fish Commission toured Willamette Falls. They got to... The commission got to witness a sea lion being trapped, transported over to the... moved to the barge, to the truck, and then hauled to Newport. They moved 10 to 12 animals. More than half of them have come back. Some people have said that's a failure, and some people have said that's a success. So I guess it's all how you know. A portion of them don't come back, so some people are saying, well, that's a good thing. And others are saying most of them come back, and that's a bad thing. So
are they just taking them to Astoria?
I heard this one went to Newport. I think initially maybe Astoria, but I think they have hauled a couple of Newport, and they are quickly finding their way back.
That's what we found, like at Bonneville Dam too. You'll ship them off somewhere, and whatever they were transported in, whether a truck or a boat, the sea lion will beat the truck or the boat back to the dam.
That's crazy.
Take them upriver and make them swim back down through the dams.
Well, so a couple of them have actually like hitched rides on barges. They'll like jump onto an empty barge and ride it up to the locks, right? So they've ended up in the Dalles and the John Day pools.
The Dalles, they were chasing some of the houseboat docks out there.
Well, some of them have gotten into some of the Native American fishing nets and fishing areas, and those sea lions have mysteriously disappeared. So. Yeah, if they make it up above Bonneville, they seem to get taken care of in one way or another. So, maybe a good idea, Greg.
Up river.
Put them on Big Mary.
Counterintuitive. Out of the box. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Anything else? All right. We're going to hang up here, but thanks, guys, for calling in. Appreciate it.
See you.
All right. Talk to you later.
You sound like the commission got to see us one sea lion tearing up.